Welcome to MTZ Overflow Podcast. You've just finished listening to the sermon. Now let's get into the overflow. We're glad you're here.
That girl looking all professional.
Trying to. It's hard out here, you know? Gotta make sure. Gotta remind the people sometimes, because I think, I don't get dressed up for work.
You don't?
Not for real. Not like this. I rarely ever wear like dresses or skirts too much, just because I'm moving around so much. Mm-hmm. I gotta pick stuff up. I gotta move stuff around. So like even for today, there's like waters and stuff that needed to be moved, and I'm like, I have this skirt and these heels on, so someone else is gonna have to do it. I leaned heavy into my femininity
today.
Heavy.
I can't believe you said that.
Happy Black History Month.
Heavy.
Maybe I'll say Happy Black History Month every month.
It is. Every day.
Every day.
Should be.
See? I posted it.
Wow. Cool.
Yep. 12 views. We were just checking, because I'm trying to be an influencer, and Pastor is an influencer.
I'm somewhat, not all the way.
You literally said on here that you were an influencer.
Yeah. I'm trying to get this moolah.
Shmoney, as the kids say.
Shmoney.
But nothing wrong with it, right? Because money is here for us to be able to do things that we need to do in order to live the life that God has called us to be. So let's talk about, we're in our last sermon series of the month, February, Black History Month, for those that didn't know. And we are talking about we're in Exodus 17:15, which if I'm recalling correctly from this whole sermon series, this is the first Old Testament scripture.
Is it?
Last time it was not.
It was
we were in Samuel.
Yeah.
Oh, Samuel. And there was Joshua.
All of them Old Testament. Yeah, I haven't been in New Testament in a while.
I just assumed David was New Testament. Nuh-uh, you were in Hebrews the first time.
Okay, yeah.
I have my notes. I wasn't crazy. But anyway, so we're in Exodus chapter 17. Pastor, what is going on in Exodus?
Right, Exodus is, you know, coming out, right? And what's going on is Moses has... went to Pharaoh, told Pharaoh, let my people go. They have been freed from the hand of the oppression of Pharaoh. They get to the Red Sea. God parts the Red Sea. They walk across on dry ground. They get to a place called Mara, which is a place where the water was too bitter to drink. And they're thirsty, and so they throw some wood in the water. Sweetens up the water. They're able to drink the water. They get hungry. They have no food. God rains down food from heaven. They get thirsty again. And God tells Moses to strike a rock with the rod. And water comes from out of the rock. So we're on this journey with the Israelites as they're leaving from oppression and being liberated. And as they have arriving to trying to get to the promised land.
Okay, so we're here. We're trying to get to the promised land. Also, welcome everyone, MTZ Overflow Podcast. Glad that you're here. So we're trying to get into the promised land, and the title of the sermon is The Power of Divine Presence. Mm-hmm. So while the Israelites are in the promised land, which has been 40, how many years at this point?
They're not in the promised land yet.
So they're not there yet. So they're in the wilderness still.
They're in the wilderness.
Okay.
And so they still, right now, they are really discovering who they are as a people. Because they've been oppressed for 400 years.
Okay.
And now they're being freed as their own people. And so they're trying to figure out who they are, and they're trying to figure out who God is really to them.
Mm-hmm.
Even though God has kept them over all these years, even while they was in oppression, but they still really don't believe that God is able. So each time they complain about something, if they face something, they complain. And some even say, we should have just stayed in Egypt.
Yeah.
Which means we should just stay slaves. And so that's definitely not what God wanted them to be, but they didn't know who God really was. So God continued to prove himself to being the God of his people.
Yeah, he continued to do that, because not even just the people of Israel, but also Africans that were brought over to the Americas through the slave trade. Mm-hmm. And you talk about how Christianity didn't begin with slave owners,
right?
Which I think is part of our history. We typically hear that all of African-American history begins with slavery. Mm-hmm. And this is you provide another account as to not just the history of us in this country, but the history of our religion and our faith in this country.
Yeah, so when Africans were robbed or stolen from their homeland, they came to America, they brought their religions with them. Some was Islam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some were Christian. And then they had other religions that they probably followed. But Christianity was not first introduced to them when they came to America. And we see that in the Bible, we see him. Oh, I gotta edit this. No, I'm not gonna edit it. It's just, what you think?
Rock steady.
We see this in the Bible, where the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts. Ethiopia is where?
Africa.
Egypt is where?
Africa.
We see that Mark and Matthew, they start churches in Africa, right? And you even see it in Paul's missionary journeys. He goes to Africa before he ever goes to Europe, right? And so we see how their faith were being established, and people were learning about Christ in Africa way before they heard about it in America. And so that's why I think we definitely need to know our history, because there's people out there that just believe, well, we're serving a slave religion, or we're serving a white man's religion, when Christianity has been around over 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And before slaves came to America, what, 1667, 76, something like that, before they ever came over here, they already knew about Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think at times when we say statements like that, I'm saying like the collective, we...
I'm sorry, 1619.
Okay, 1619. When you hear people say those general statements, it really makes me think about like how much we just kind of, not even just like our faith history, but just like history of the world and just like the location of where, like you were saying, like where Paul was, where Jesus was, disciples, people were traveling, like all of that's happening over there. So right. As we tell the story of our land here in the United States, why wouldn't other countries do the same and continue to share all aspects of it, which includes religion?
Right.
So
before we move on, you know how they did a lot of trading, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had to get certain stuff from certain places and move around. And so that's how they was able to evangelize and share the gospel when they trade or when they come in contact with people that are not from their area. And they learned about Jesus Christ in that method. And that's what, you know, the Bible said, you know, that the disciples turned the world upside down. So they tell them to go from Jerusalem, Samaria, Judea, and to the ends of the earth. And so that's what the apostles did. And that's how we now have Christianity all the way over here.
Yeah. And the getting through, as we'll talk deeper into the scripture, but that comes with a level of knowing that God will bring us through. Essentially, why do we need a divine presence?
Right.
And you did a great job in breaking that down in the sermon with the first point of
told you, Women's Day, get ready.
I haven't even said anything yet.
You said we, so that
means
you helped me prepare.
Oh, I'm helping you prepare.
You already did, though.
Oh, I did. Oh, who are we talking about on Women's Day?
Let's keep going.
Okay, no spoilers, I guess. First point is allows you to be ready to fight. You talked about all my life I had to fight. You went Color Purple. I went Knuck If You Buck.
Knuck If You Buck.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
That's the way I went. But tell us a bit more about why we need to be ready to fight in divine presence.
Yeah, so looking at this, you see the children of Israel, they are not an army of people. They've been slaves, so they have not been training to fight.
Okay.
They have not been preparing to fight wars or battles, as most country would have an army to fight. But while they're traveling, some Amalekites, this other nation.
They back
and they attack them, right? Mm. And when they attack them, Moses said, go fight. No one complains. In other instances, when they run out of food, when they run out of water, when they get to the Red Sea, the people complain.
Yeah.
Right? They complain. Some, even like I stated before, some even say, I'd rather go back and be a slave than be out here and die in the desert of hunger or of thirst. But when it was time to fight, they were ready. But we see their obstacles continue to increase each time. If you read from Exodus 14 all the way through 17, you'll see the different trials or the different obstacles in which they face. First, it was a Red Sea. Then it's water. Then it's food. Then it's water again. So now we look at the basic necessities of living.
Yeah.
And then now it's life, because now we have another group of people trying to conquer them. And instead of them bowing down, now I believe, based on my interpretation of the text, they now have faith in themselves, but also faith in God to be able to help them to be able to fight. And so that's why I say, you know, when you have the presence of God, when you understand that God is with you, not afraid anymore, right? And that's why when you have family or when you have friends that you know can fight, when you with a friend that you know can fight and y'all get in some stuff, you don't mind fighting with them, because if you lose or losing, you know they're going to jump in and help.
Hmm.
And so now I think this was their mentality. I know you've never been in a fight before. And that's a good
thing. That's
true. That's a good thing. But some of us had to, all our lives, we had to fight. And when you have the understanding about who's with you, it's all right to fight that fight.
Two questions. One, were you that friend that people called upon to fight?
Sometimes.
Silence means yes.
Sometimes.
You said,
when I was young.
How though, do I present
When I was
myself?
young, not in my... Oh, later.
No. We're not talking like, you know, once, you know, your family man, kid. Yeah. No, not talking about them, but just.
When I was in the Army, too, I first went in, I was 19 years old, still, you know, can't tell those stories out loud. My wife don't like me telling those stories, so.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Honor your wife.
Yeah, I honor her. I love that girl.
That's so,
love you, too.
That's so good. I also thought that maybe the Israelites just like to fight. Because, like, if I'm... I was thinking about, like, my nephews, okay? They are... one is 12 and one is 16.
Okay.
They will complain about waking up, going to the store, going to school, doing chores. Pick your thing. They are complaining. But they like playing video games. So they will not complain about...
Yeah.
If they need to go to the store to get a controller, they're not complaining about that. If they need to go and get a new game, they're not complaining about. Or if you're out, maybe you can get a new game. Like, they're not complaining about those things because that's what they like to do.
Right.
So that's what I was thinking. I was like, maybe they like to fight. Maybe they've been fighting. You know, like a team in preseason, all they do is scrimmage each other.
Right.
They're tired of competing against each other. They want to compete against somebody else. These Amalekites are just the first ones to, like, throw up some smoke. They did the signal, you know, like the guy in Alabama, threw the hat. That's what the Amalekites.
I just saw a picture. It said the fade in the water. but so you look at the history of the Israelite people, they have not yet become a nation. If you follow biblical history, you'll see that Abraham is the father of the children of Israel. Abraham has a son. His name is Isaac. Isaac has Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons. Those 12 sons create the 12 tribes of Israel.
Okay.
Joseph is the knee baby, as they would call it. He's the second to the youngest. He's next to the youngest baby.
Okay.
Youngest son. And Joseph is the one that saves everyone and allows them to come and live in Egypt with them during the famine. It's in Egypt where they began to grow. They began to multiply because they, and when they began to multiply, Pharaoh, the king, is upset, and at least not upset, but he's afraid because it was so many of them. They suggested that they may grow to be larger than us and overtake us. And so there became a Pharaoh who knew not who Joseph was, because Joseph had done so much for the children, for Egypt, saved their lives. And so because he had did so much, they spared his family. And his family then begins to grow a lot, because God tells Abraham, your children would be like the stars in the sky or the sand on the seashore, which means you would not be able to number them. And so now they're growing. And the more the king oppressed them, the more they grew. And well, someone, I want to say, you know,
go ahead.
Poor people have a lot of children. Oppressed people have a lot of children.
Can you relate that?
No, I just said somebody said that. I'm not going to build on it. Just saying.
Oh, that's the whole point of this podcast. But okay. Yeah, let's just leave it though.
We're just gonna leave it there. You know, the more they were oppressed, the more they grew, because they had to love on each other more because they wasn't receiving any love from the outside. Mm. I said it that way. I'm trying to keep it PG-13.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
So we're looking at what else the divine presence reveals. It reveals true friends. And mm-hmm. this is where Moses is up on the mountain, mm-hmm. the hill.
Yeah.
And he brought two people with him to, I'm assuming this was his homies. Aaron is his brother. Mm-hmm. And then her.
Good job. You.
So it's H-U-R.
Yeah.
So this is my theory. They didn't want to identify this woman in the Bible.
Oh my
gosh. So they made it sounded like her. But it could also be a man's name.
Really?
Regardless. What?
Continue. You know, there's a lot of feminist theologians out there, and womanist theologians. Now, I think you fall in that category.
That's fine. What do you?
That's amazing. I'm just saying that's good.
I support it
100%.
What I'm saying is that Moses also brought a woman up there because he knew that he could depend on her.
I wouldn't say that because it's not stated, and we're informed not to add to nor take away from the biblical.
It
text.
Also doesn't state. That's a man.
Okay.
Does it?
I don't see it.
But we know, anyway. So what I actually really liked about how you spoke about the true friends, you mentioned it like briefly when you talked about leadership. And I thought it could be really cool to look at Moses as a leader in this space. Mm-hmm. And how as a leader, you know, he really shows that it's not about just you.
Right.
As leaders, you bring people along with you.
Facts.
It's not you don't get to the mountain alone. You have people with you, because mm-hmm. at this time Moses is pretty old at this time.
Preach.
Yeah, so it's not as if he could get up this mountain by himself. Preach. So the people that came with him knew his ability and inability. Mm-hmm. And so they needed to support him in a variety of ways, not just getting up the mountain, maybe sitting down. We don't know how long. The Bible doesn't tell us how long it took them to get up this mountain or when they started the journey. Mm-hmm. But we know that they went with him. Then we talk about there's a group of people that support you, and maybe just your few. Like you have your inner circle, as some may call it. You may have your advisors, but they're the people that you trust who believe in your mission as a leader to be able to pursue that. And then there's also the piece about leadership, which I think can become pretty challenging, and it's knowing your role. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're what we do see, what we tend to see depicted, I'll just say like in the media spaces, is that people will befriend you, get close to you, learn your philosophy, maybe take you up the mountain. Excuse me, but then when it's time to, when they seize their opportunity, I'm pushing you down the mountain so that I can be the leader and the person that's in charge. But true leaders and true followers all understand their role and they understand the value of it. Right. So I thought that was a really great time to talk about that, because I have not heard Moses being depicted as a leader in that space. So I appreciate the time that you took to share that.
Yeah, Moses, his leadership is paramount, especially for those of us who are leading large groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And his, especially his leadership in this moment, because it took some humility on his part to allow them to go with him.
Yeah.
He could have been like, I'm going by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hold this rod up. As long as I'm holding it up, they win. When it comes down, Joshua will lose. Most I could do this by myself. And sometimes as leaders, people will frustrate you and make you say, I'm just going to do this by myself.
Mm.
But then you would see the effects of you going by yourself. It's difficult on you, which will cause the people to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so Moses takes a team with him. And when he's unable to hold up the rod, his team, his friends, they help him. And they understand it's not our role to hold the rod. Our role is to support the one who's holding the rod.
Yep.
Right? And so, like I said, Aaron, he probably was next in line.
Mm-hmm.
If Moses failed, then it would have been Aaron. But Aaron decides, I want Moses to succeed. So let me help Moses be the best he can be so that I can prove that I can be the best that I can be in the moment. And so, and that's just looking at that when it comes to leadership. You have to have a team. You have to know your role. You have to have some humility. And you also have to be a servant. And sometimes you may not get the credit for the idea, but you know you gave your thoughts and you allowed that leader or that person to make things happen based off your recommendations.
Yeah, that's good, because it definitely takes a level of humility and even putting yourself in a position where you could get ridiculed as well. So like if you are following the leader, or if you are stepping out in a space that maybe that you believe in, but you haven't maybe said so out loud, that really shows up, especially in this Jackie Robinson example that you gave of Pee Wee Reese,
mm-hmm.
and how he went out and he in the middle during the game and literally in the middle of the game at second base, and put his arm around Jackie Robinson, and the signal that's shared radiated. I think now like. In our current day and age, like that symbol isn't as momentous, but during that time period, the fact that Jackie Robinson has been experiencing so much ridicule while competing, one, at a high level. So think about just like the mental toll that was taking, and just the ability to be able to continue to show up and perform. So I'm sure there's plenty of times where he could be like, you know what? I don't really care about this whole baseball thing. I'm going to go. And then to make that gesture, or to show that gesture. And I will say, I'm not trying to idolize Pee Wee Reese in this, but recognizing the impact that his gesture made in bringing to light the awareness of what is going on to a black man in his sport that he's playing. Almost like, I don't tolerate that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing that to him, you're doing that to me.
Right. Saying, I'm a friend.
Yeah.
I'm a friend, and I don't have much to give, but what I do have, I can stand by you. I can give you my presence.
Yeah.
And sometimes as friends, when people go through and people are having challenging times, it's not much you can do, right? You may be, they probably have rent that's due, and you don't have money to help.
Yeah.
But you have, you know, your presence to be there with them, to hold their hand, to walk with them and talk with them. And sometimes that's all people need, is just know that someone is on their team. And that's what Pee was able to do for Jackie and allow him to persevere through that moment.
Yeah, you like sometimes we need to feel God in the flesh.
For sure.
Did you know that humans need 8 hugs a day?
8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. How many you got today?
I don't think I got any today. I'm not. Oh, I got one.
I got two.
Dang.
I know. I need some more hugs. But it's that closeness. Like, it's that feeling.
8 a day?
A day.
Dang. That's a lot.
Yeah. Not really. You got, there's 3 other people in your house. You get 2 hugs from them. All you need is 2 more.
I don't. I'm not that touchy-feely type.
It's not touchy-feely. It's not.
It is. It's like, give me a hug. Come hug me. I'm not that. I don't know. I think I'm a thug sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
You think you're a thug sometimes. So it's not even like a something that, anyway. 8 hugs a day. They're good for you.
Crazy. Come on.
Third point. As we transition into our third point, talking about divine presence is the reason for victory. Mm-hmm. And this is where you talk about no weapon
right.
formed against me shall prosper. Because why?
You close your eyes and everything. You was into that.
It won't work.
Good job.
I can hold a couple notes every once in a while.
I'm about to get you in front of the church.
No. They're not going to do me like you did those young men.
They asked for that.
They said, hey, Pastor. They said, hey, Pastor Allen, please let me be in front of the church.
They said, no, please. They sung at
Relevant Worship.
And then I was like, man, yeah, I'm going to put y'all in front of church. They was like, we good. Call us up. You know, some people like, no, don't call me up. They was like, call us up. I was like, all right, I'm calling you up next week. And so they got up and sung. And they did a great job.
They did a great job. Can't wait to have them sing again. They probably won't, but I'm proud of them. I really liked this idea of a banner. Mm-hmm. And in learning about like what Jehovah means, because I'll be honest, I don't think I actually knew what Jehovah means. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was another word for God, Jehovah, right. Yahweh. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just like a regional word. And so to learn that it means a self-existent one who reveals himself. So Jehovah is like who shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's how I'm understanding it. Mm-hmm. And then Nisi is a flag or banner. Didn't know that. Is that Greek?
Hebrew. Old Testament Hebrew, New Testament Greek.
Bet.
Some Aramaic in both.
Okay. So Nisi is Hebrew for flag or banner. Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So it gives a whole different meaning to the word, the song that we typically sing that talks about all the different names Jehovah's, for God. Yeah. So it's a flag. It's this banner that is displayed about the victories victories with God in them. Mm-hmm. So we got a banner, and that's cute. Like you get a banner to keep, but why is there? What is the reason for victory?
Yeah. So. If you go to like I served in the army. And every unit in the army has a banner to identify who they are. And not only does that banner identify who they are, at the division level, they have these streamers on it that show the wars that unit has participated in. So OIF-1, Desert Storm, Kosovo, World War I, II, so all of these, the 101st and Fort Campbell, Kentucky, one of the combat units I was in, they would have all these streamers on the pole. And the pole would have the banners on it, and everyone in the formation can see the banner. Mm. No matter how far back, that's why it's lifted up. And it has different movements based off the banner. So when the banner is lifted up, you move a certain way. And so this banner is in front of the formation, and normally it's right beside of the commander or the first sergeant or sergeant major or whoever is leading the large group of people. And so if I see the banner, I know where I'm going. So that's for us who's on the side of the banner. But the banner also shows to the enemy, those you're about to fight, how experienced or how many wars you fought in. And so if you have a banner, that means you won. If there's no banner, that means you either you haven't fought, or it means you lost the war. And so when you go, similar to if you go to Crypto Arena, you're going to see, what, 16, 17 championships hanging up, like the for the Lakers. If you go to Pfizer Forum, you see banners hanging up. If you go to Badger Cold Center or Camp Randall, you see, you know, they have banners to signify the victories we've already won. Mm. And when your opponent sees, oh, they didn't won so many wars or they won so many victories, these people are used to fighting or they're used to playing or they're used to playing at a high level. And so that alone causes fear in your opponent, because people know, you know what it takes to win. And so that Moses says, he is our banner. He goes before us. He is displaying to our enemy that he is on our side. And when cancer or diabetes or heart disease or dysfunctional family or defeat or discouragement looks at us, it don't just see us. It sees the banner or the standard in which God has lifted up for us and gives us that comfort that the presence of God is with us and we already have the victory. And we see even in this story that the fight that they were going, what they were doing was not for them. The fight was God's fight. Mm-hmm. And when we look at life and we say, hey, this battle is not mine, it's the Lord's, that's the truth. That's why the banner is there to help us display to others who we are.
So you said that banners in military terms are from the countries or the conflicts that mm-hmm. You won. In the world of life, what are the banners that could be on our pole to display our victories?
Right, there's only one for us right now, Jesus. He climbed up a pole, which is the cross, and he's the.
So
you
pause.
You about to shout? Don't shout.
Said that in the sermon, I was like, I was like, really?
That's the banner for us. Oh, dang. That's, ooh.
He said, Jesus ooh, went up a pole like a flag.
Chill, yeah. For us, he became the banner for us. So, as a song would say, I'm on the battlefield for the Lord. And I promise that I promise him that I will serve him till I die.
Yeah.
I'm on the battlefield for the Lord. And then he said, I'm going to hold up the bloodstained banner. The bloodstained, the blood comes from the blood of Jesus. And I hold up the bloodstained banner. It's letting the world know that I'm on the Lord's side. And I have the presence of the Lord with me. And so he fights my battles for me. And so our responsibility now is just to lift him up. And if we lift him up, he said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. And so that's our responsibility, is to lift him up. And we prove to the world that he is our banner.
Great. I think that's a good place for us to stop.
Good place.
That's a good place. Pastor, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening.
Oh, yeah.
Continue to check back for more episodes as we continue to have these wonderful conversations with my forever guest.
Forever.
Forever, ever? Oh, you didn't do it.
Ever, ever.
Thanks.
My bad. I ain't go with you. I got it, but I just didn't go with you.
Until then, until
stay
we see you
marvelous,
next
time. Marvelous.
Fabulous.
Fabulous and blessed.
Peace.
Ooh, I'm terrible to do.